Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott welcome a wine that's in the Wine Spectator Top 100, namely Babbage Black Label Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy. And tonight, I am joined by Scott Baio impersonator, Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
I don't even know how to do a Scott Baio imitation, so I'm not going to try to play along.
Basically, you want to make out with Donald Trump. That's how that is. Here, let me help you with that.
What?
Make out with him, yeah.
He's despicable, and he has small hands.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, you're MAGA through and through, so that's what I'm saying.
Scott Baio is?
Yeah. No.
When did that happen?
And as an impersonator, you would have to be too. Oh, he always has been. That guy's a psychopath. Scott Baio?
A MAGA guy?
What else does he have going for him? He's Scott fucking Baio. He was on Charles in Charge.
I would think that he probably did okay with the ladies, maybe?
Chachi loves whatever it is. Joni loves Chachi.
Joni loves Chachi.
Did okay with the ladies in the 80s.
He's still a relatively attractive man. I wouldn't go for him, but apparently you think Donald Trump does.
I don't know.
Or vice versa.
It could be. I mean, I've read that somewhere. I wrote it down and I read it, but that's okay. It's satire.
It was a bad week for Don.
Every day is a bad week.
He owes a lot of money.
He does. What, $83
million? $83
Whoopsie. Dollars. Whoopsie. You know,
I think he already has...
Maybe should have not have walked out of the courtroom.
Because it's E. Jean Carroll's second lawsuit against him. He's already got $10 million sitting in escrow with her name on it. And now it went up to $83 million.
That's a bit up.
The judge originally awarded $5 million. The jury bumped it to $10 million. $73.3 million in punitive damages because he can't keep his fucking mouth shut and stop deriding this person that essentially ran her out of the entertainment business. It's just despicable. Whether you agree with his political viewpoints and ability to be president or not, fucking keep your mouth shut, dude. You would, and it's just ridiculous. He's silly man.
Well, speaking of ridiculous, every year the Wine Spectator puts out a list, and we talk about it on this show, and they name the top 100 wines. Most of those wines you never heard of or you can't get anyway. But sometimes, for like 35 seconds, one becomes available. And the one that became available that we're having tonight, it's a Sauvignon Blanc, and you're saying, yes, I understand. It's a Sauvignon Blanc, but it was ranked number 21 of all the wines in the world. They looked
not on the value list, on the top 100 list.
Top 100 list. And they looked and said, Petrus, fuck you. Babbage, Black Label Sauvignon Blanc.
Don't cuss at me like that. Don't call me that.
Babbage?
Don't call me that.
Okay. But they said this was better. Normally you'd say, once again, it's a Sauvignon Blanc. Who fucking cares? Well,
wait, this ranked higher than Petrus?
Of course it did. I mean, Petrus wasn't on the list, so.
Well.
I mean, yes. So, yes, Petrus is terrible. This is better than Petrus. But this is only, remember, number 21, is only $14.99. $2 cheaper than Kim Crawford, at least where we live. Maybe $3 cheaper than where you live. So this is wildly cheap. And the Spectator gave it 93 of their points for a $14.99 Sauvignon Blanc. So you put all those things together, you go, well, that's a rare treat. Or that's rare. Not necessarily a treat, I mean, Sauvignon Blanc. But still, that's why. Wine.com had it for like 35 seconds available. I got a bottle. I think it was limit one bottle per person. I got my bottle. I'm very excited about it. So that's what we're doing tonight. How good is this wine? Obviously, the 2022, this is that vintage. It's gone. But is this a wine that you should look for over your normal things that are out there? Your Oyster Bays, your Kim Crawfords, dare I say. I don't know. We will find that out, though. So, and also beyond that, tonight we have many things to talk about. Partly because we're not sick again.
Well,
we missed another week because my whole family had the stomach flu, or whatever you want to call it. The norovirus, is that what it is?
The plague.
The plague. Three of my four children had it at the same time. I said to myself, I'll be all right. And so we reset the show taping for Tuesday. Unfortunately, that Tuesday evening, I wasn't available because I was thrown up.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
No, it just didn't work out that way. But
technically, didn't William have it like a week earlier?
Yeah, you know, like a week and a half. But that was just one child. We can avoid one child. We can't avoid three. Becky got it before I did. But when Becky got it, it was like 2 p.m. I said to Becky, because she was still kind of recovering, I went, just so you understand, you're going to have to pull your bootstraps up because I'm about to get in the throes of this too. And she goes, no. Oh, yeah. I had to go pick up my oldest child. He was getting his hair permed. That's right.
Permed.
He was at the hair salon and getting his perm. And so I had to go pick him up at the hair salon while I'm getting right at the beginning of the throes of death. Smelling all those chemicals and shit. It was great. It was fucking great. He wasn't ready either. He was under some fucking dryer. I was like, bitch, you better fucking get that. And I had to wait like 20 minutes in the waiting room. And so it's a busy place. So people were coming in. This lady was going to sit next to me. I'm thinking, first of all, I can't stand up and give you my seat. Second of all, please don't sit next to me. Don't do that. I didn't say anything, but I'm thinking, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. It's like, please, you don't. I'm that guy. You don't want to sit next to him right now.
For her family.
For everyone,
you were
sakes.
Patient zero.
I was for everyone. I will kill you just by being in your presence. So I don't know if she died or not. That's okay.
Well.
Nevertheless, folks, we are going to take a break. But then we will be right back here on the Wine Vault. Hey, everybody. It's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So the Babbage Black Label. Black Label is a unique name, normally because we associate it with beer or barbecue sauce. More of a manly kind of butch, backwoods kind of thing.
It'd be like
cheap cigars.
You know, a bourbon line or a whiskey line or a liquor line. Usually have a black label. Or
yes.
A reserve that's got a black.
The label is, in fact, black with silver accents, but that doesn't mean you couldn't call it Red Label. But it's an odd name. I'm not sure why that is. But,
is
you know.
This their entry-priced offering?
On their site, their wines, and they actually have a wide variety. They have Anabarino, they have Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc. In the reds, they have Cabernet, Malbec, Merlot, Merlot Cabernet. Then a kind of a Bordeaux style blend, Pinot, Syrah, some sort of red that you don't want, and they have your favorite rosé. Ranges, they have the straight Babbage, Black Label, Family Estates, Family Reserves, Select Blocks Organic, Iron Gate, the Patriarch, which I've seen somewhere, Winemaker's Reserve, and the Wine Library. So yes, they have some of those. We can go through it all, but I mean, we're only young for a certain amount of time. They have a lot, don't they?
They have a Gruner Veltliner.
Yeah, they do.
That's interesting.
I think this winery's been around since 1918 or 1916, one of those two. This is on the label. It was established in 1916. So this has been around in New Zealand. That's a long time. It's just not higher yield. And it hasn't necessarily, I mean, it isn't a 1 million case production company. So okay. Yeah, it's $14.99, but this is more of a modest production wine. You know, $10,000, $15,000. I mean, that's what it is. This also isn't their entry level. Their entry level is just Babbage, I do believe. And depending on what market you live in, you might see these wines. I don't know. We don't. We do not see these wines at all. But yeah, they have a base one that I assume probably retails around $9, like Oyster Bay. And this is that next label up.
Interesting. Yeah, they've got the mm-hmm. another line above this, the Winemaker's Reserve.
Well, they have multiple different ones above this or equal to it.
Interesting.
Now, in the Black Label line, they don't have Cabernet and all that kind of stuff. They just have the Sauvignon Blanc, a Pinot Gris, and a Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir would be interesting to find. I've never seen it, but because that would be probably sub 20. That's always fun. It's always fun to try these kind of things. Whether they're good or not is kind of a second thing. It's just, you see a wine that has some acclaim that's reasonably priced, and you see the red in that same line. You're like, yeah.
Give it a try.
Yeah, I'd try that, yeah. I mean, we did that with Oyster Bay, and we shouldn't have.
Yeah, we shouldn't have.
But this wine itself, 100% Sauvignon Blanc, all stainless steel. They don't put any, it's not on oak, apparently. It does have some reviews. We said 93 from the Wine Spectator, and we do have an esteemed guest to read that review.
That's right, you do. That's Wilfred Wong, folks. Scott likes to say nasty things about me. He's missed me. You know, I know, Scott, that we've been apart for so long that I can tell that you like singing, like Scott likes those old 80s animation movies, like the dinosaur thing, where they sing like Somewhere Out There. Or is that with the mouse, Scott? I don't recall.
Yeah.
It's with the mouth? Yeah. Faisal. Is that the mouth? Faisal. So Scott will stand out there on his porch next to the hole where his pool isn't and sing Somewhere Out There. Now, he could be singing that to a lot of different people, but I know he's probably singing that to me. And he's crying, which is embarrassing because his neighbors look out and he's not wearing many clothes because, you know, he's getting ready for bed. So he's wearing like a wife beater. That's a bad term, but that's what he's wearing. And some saggy underwear. And then he's wearing this robe, but he doesn't, like, close it. And the strange thing is, it's like 37 degrees outside when he's doing this. And he's standing next to his destroyed backyard, next to this pool that isn't in, with dirt mounds everywhere, beer cans strewn all over the place. He didn't drink the beer, folks. That's the people that came over to pretend to work drank the beer. They did
mostly high noons.
High noons. Okay. So he has pansies as laborers. So.
And seltzers.
Yeah, they have to worry about that.
Grapefruit seltzer.
Yeah, that's right. And he's singing Somewhere Out There while he's crying. And they're like, what the fuck is wrong? You know, it's just I feel you, Scott. Literally. When you're awake. And asleep sometimes, too. Anyway, the Wine Spectator, 93 of their points. And it wrote, intense and generous with mango. Oh, that's mango chutney. Orange sorbet and apricot flavors, along with notes of sweet grass, lemon blossoms, which I guess on a fleshy, juicy frame, reveals notes of fresh ginger and a hint of jasmine on the finish. Yeah, it's nice. It's very nice, Scott. I would read the Wine Spectator's Top 100 review, but it's different than their actual magazine review.
Well,
it's awkward for them, and it's never the same.
It's never the same.
No, it's because they send a different bottle for review, but that's okay. Anyway, also, it's got some other scores, by the way. By the way, first vintage for this label was 2005, Scott. You didn't know that. So.
I wasn't really aware of that.
You didn't fucking care, too.
Don't fucking care.
No. So, James Suckling, That Ponzi bastard from Tuscany/New Jersey,
well,
he gave it 90 of his points.
Not many of his points.
Wow, he's drinking Chilean. That's what he's doing.
Chilean Sauvignon Blanc?
Well, no. Some dude named Chilean. Anyway, then Cameron Douglas M.S. Master Sommelier is what that is. Cameron is a master sommelier. See how I did that, Scott?
I like how you did that.
Yeah, he gave it 94 of his points because he's a master. Then the Decanter World Wine Awards for 2023. Wouldn't you like to go to that, Scott?
Sure.
It's probably at an Econo Lodge somewhere. Anyway, they gave it 93 of their points. the Connell Lodge where like the cockroaches running around scurrying the shag carpet. It's nice. There was one that Rob the Wine Guy, there was an Indian restaurant attached to it, and it took his family there. It was really good.
I mean, you actually liked that restaurant.
It was good. Yeah, yeah.
It was in Heath, Ohio. Or was that Hebron?
It's more, it was south of the Lion's Den, so that would still be Hebron.
Maybe.
The Lion's Den Adult Superstore, which is not that big, but I know because I've been inside. It's the line of demarcation for Hebron to Heath. If you go past it, you're in Heath. If you're south of there, it's Hebron. That's not actually geographically correct, but that's the way I see it, you know. And if you go in there, you're Scott. So, you know, he has that trench coat, and you don't wear that trench coat any place but there. Beyond that, the enthusiast gave a 92 of their points, and Robert Parker, or somebody that works for him, gave it 91. Lots of good scores.
That's good a score. Lot of points.
It's a lot of points. Yeah, if you add that up and divide it out.
You'd be doing some math.
That's right.
You're not into the math.
Nah.
You don't do many of the math.
Nah, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
So
just
this
very happy that you can check your balance in your account. You don't have to do the math anymore. You just, what's my account? Should I use the debit card? Okay, yes.
Sorry.
Oh, shit. I forgot. I just ordered $500 worth of wine.
That happens.
Damn it.
That's right. I'm sorry. I'm Belgian.
That's what the draft protection's for.
Yes. It's true. In the glass, though. And the question I have tonight, is this better than Kendall Jackson? Or Kendall Jackson? That, too. Kim Crawford. I did pour a glass for Becky, so she's drinking it. So she liked it.
She
didn't want to say. She liked it.
I think she was no hesitation.
She liked it. Yeah.
Talking about her enjoyment.
Yeah. In the glass.
Straw.
Straw. Kind of like
a little paler than that.
With just the lightest wink of green. Just the lightest wink. It's the right color.
Yeah. Sauvignon Blanc. It's Sauvignon Blanc.
Yep. Good clarity.
A little.
Little effervescence, but not too
much. A little on the pale side.
Yeah, but you want it. If it's dark, then it's old. That's kind of how that works. On the nose. And we should have a vibrant nose here. Oh, jeez.
You got that waxiness
that you expect.
It's
wet when you stick your nose in it.
Yeah, well, if I knew it was that kind of party, I'd take in the mashed potatoes.
I smell the jasmine, which also could be baby powder.
Waxy.
Definitely waxy. A little bit of a sweet green apple. Almost like a sweet Granny Smith crisp.
A sweet green apple? I don't know what that means. Green apple's not sweet.
A ripe one.
So you mean
lots of flavor.
Apple. Okay.
I know what I mean. Apple Jack.
It's a good thing somebody does.
Apple Jack.
Crack killed Applejack.
There is baby powder though. Talc? You want to call it talc? We'll say talc.
Yeah, it's just
has a little bit of a talc.
And like lemon.
Lemon, yeah.
It's a really nice nose.
It is a nice nose.
So often, and I'm looking at the description of these reviews for the nose, and they're all different things than what we said, but here's one that said lemon and peach.
No. Well, peach.
Sweet grass, lemon blossom, sweet grass. I don't know what sweet grass is. It's not sweet grass, it's sweet grass.
Is that like lemon grass? Are they saying some sort of Asian influence?
Maybe. Let's see what sweet grass is. I don't even know what sweet grass is. Let's
see. I keep smelling that talc. It's on the tip end. It's one of the more prominent things I'm smelling is talcum powder. Which you could attribute to minerality, and it's not off putting. It works.
There's sweet grass in Western United States and Western Canada,
and
Montana,
what? And it is
Edmonton,
what?
Saskatchewan.
Grass.
There are different Latin names for the plant, and I've not heard of any of them.
Great. Who fucking said Sweetgrass?
Now, it does. This is the Wikipedia. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 6 bullets when it describes the different plants. 5, it says colloquially for cannabis.
So it smells like pot?
I think it's just colloquially people say, give me some of that sweetgrass.
Oh.
Sheathgrass belongs to the genus Colanthus. Eulabergia sericea, I don't know. It's native to the southeastern United States. Native to Eurasia. Sweet vernal grass, don't know any of these. Manna grass. Any of the many species in the genus Glyceria. Don't know what sweet grass is. These names are not giving me anything.
Well, I just tasted it. Scott's looking up grass.
I think they made that name up. I don't think anybody knows what sweet grass aromas are. Who said that? Who said sweet? That was Marianne Warbeck from The Speculator. I'm just not commenting.
This reminds me, and I'm just going to say, okay, it's on stainless, right? This reminds me greatly, maybe this is a compliment. This reminds me greatly of a Napa Valley style Sauvignon Blanc. It's not as open and as inviting as, say, Kim Crawford is. Kim Crawford, though, is a stylized grocery store Blanc, right?
Oh.
But it's inviting. It's sweet. This is very traditional Sauvignon Blanc in many, many ways because it's very stern.
There's a lot going on the front palate, a lot of fruit there, and there's a dive. It just dives. This front palate just dives. There's not much in the mid palate. There's a brief kiss of minerality.
Yeah.
And it's not the longest thing, but it's Sauvignon Blanc, folks, so that's okay. But it's a little bit out of balance in that there's this front palate that not only is it big and fruity, it goes on for a good amount of time. And then there's just this kiss of a mid palate. And sometimes a Sauvignon Blanc, some of the fruit transitions and becomes kind of the finish. That just doesn't go on here.
Well, I think what is here, it's incredibly acidic. It just masks it so well through the front and the mid, and the acidity just really rips in that finish. I'm not seeing this big fruity wine on the front palate,
though. I think maybe it's not big fruity, but there's a lot of different fruit that exhibits. You've got the citrus. There's melon. There's distinctness in the citrus. You can get different things. I can pick out grapefruit. I can pick out lemon. I don't know about lime.
Well,
there's waxiness about it. It's not the pink grapefruit. Waxiest. It doesn't go completely to like petroleum.
Pink grapefruit is the predominant thing, which makes sense because it's New Zealand, and New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs show pink grapefruit more than any other do. I mean, this tastes like pink grapefruit juice in a wine sense, a very refined presentation of it. So if you're saying, what does extremely dry, classic, straightforward, well, not straightforward, but it's better than that. But Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand, what should it taste like?
You know this is New Zealand.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that's something that the acidity almost hides.
Yeah.
This is really astringent. This is really dry.
It's extremely dry.
It's got certainly
which
sweet.
It's supposed to be.
Not this is really on the drier side of
but Sauvignon Blanc
dry Sauvignon Blanc.
Should be the driest white that there is. That's how it works. Sauvignon Blanc's is driest. There is not a Sauvignon Blanc, white wine, that is supposed to be drier than Sauvignon Blanc. Look it up on the dryness scale.
Yeah.
It has the lowest residual sugar of any of them. And and it's buoyed by acidity. That's why it goes well with shellfish, things of that nature, which this would. The thing is, so often, because it grows so well in certain regions, they handle it a little bit different, let it get a little bit, hold it a little bit longer on the vine, get a little more residual sugar in that, make it a little rounder, riper, so they can use that grape that grows so well in certain regions and sell more of it.
Yeah, I don't know that Sauvignon Blanc always presents
as
the driest white wine, though.
It is the driest white wine. These things that do not present that way are not classic Sauvignon Blanc. They're not, because it's not Sauvignon Blanc. Mm. What are you hunting for? Mm. They're not. That's not what Sauvignon Blanc tastes like.
I get it, but, you know,
it's incorrect presentation of Sauvignon Blanc.
The New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs are, this is way on the dry scale for those.
It's drier than the most of the ones that you drink, but classic ones that are over there. This is not that. I mean, Cloudy Bay had a little bit more body because it's a bigger wine, right? So you didn't notice the acidity and the dryness as much because it was a slightly bigger wine. But in reality, it was dry like this. It tasted like an essence of everything. That's the trick of Cloudy Bay. It's poofs of different things. It's delicacy, you know. It's such a lithy, delicate thing that it has some sort of merit through that. This wine, though, is just extremely well done, traditional, dry New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. That's just what it is. And if someone really likes that, I mean, a 93 is a crackhead because you need more tinsel for 93.
Well, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of subtlety and there's a lot of things that this wine has. I understand why they picked this one at 21. I'm not saying it is number 21, but it has a lot of merit. It is really good. This is well done, really well made. I love that it's just a glimpse of minerality. One of the reviews talked about like wet stone, and this thing like dives off a cliff at you.
It nods at those
fruit finishes,
things. Yeah.
But along the way as it's jumping off the cliff, there's a kiss of wet stone. Then here's the end of that acidity. And here's that dryness.
You just wish it would hang on to a little bit of that stuff a little bit longer and give you more of a glimpse of them.
Particularly, I wish this had that the finish lasted half as long as the front palate is.
Yeah. Well, no.
I do.
The finish is lengthy, but it's acidity. It's not complex. It's just residuary acidity. And the front palate has some stuff there, but in reality, it's dominated by pink grapefruit, which it would be. And there's some melon in that, too. Becky drank it when it was colder. That's why it's going to show a little bit differently, too. We're drinking as it warms up and shows more of its normal flavors. If you drank it colder, it's going to be very, very, probably a sleeker wine. But we need to be able to taste what's there.
It's interesting that she pulled the melon out then. And I think there's less melon than I would have expected from what she said. And you would expect, as it warms up, the melon might show more.
Not on this one, because the acidity is going to show more.
Okay.
And the acidity is the pink grapefruit.
Or maybe...
Melon's still there.
What we're seeing is the mango is what she had.
I know fucking mango.
I get some mango. Right at the beginning.
Well, it's piney.
I get some mango.
I mean... Okay. But it's not, none of those things are predominant. I mean, this is not what's really, this wine isn't necessarily something that hangs its hat on its front palate. Because, I mean, you know, it's got one, it's got some stuff there. It's all just a little bit underripe, but it's really, the focus is the pink grapefruit and the acidity and the fact it's a textbook example of what New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc is supposed to taste like, even though normally it doesn't. That's kind of what I would say. I mean,
it's interesting that James Suckling is the low mark at 90 points.
James has something there. I don't know what he wrote. I just know what he scored it.
And
I mean,
let's see. Aromas of dragon fruit. Green bell pepper. Didn't get that.
No.
And peaches. Fair enough. I don't know about the peaches either. Medium bodied with silky texture. You know, we didn't talk about that texture.
Texture's okay.
Yeah, silky's not a bad description. Fresh and bright, like it. Soft finish. Sustainable.
The winery is sustainable. It says it on the label. That's what he just read off.
That's what he meant? That the winery is sustainable?
Yes. He's just giving a point that it's sustainable.
Shouldn't he spell that out and say, this winery uses sustainable methods, rather it's than James, in a review of the wine?
What are you trying to say?
That I don't believe that
Rob the wine guy understood what I said.
You are Rob the wine guy.
No. I say, with one word, I say everything I need to say.
Part of a review, I wouldn't talk about their sustainable practices. It's a review of the wine.
You know, Scott, with one word, I can describe you to...
Sustainable?
No. Clown fucker, yes.
That's two words.
No, it's hyphenated. It's not a real word. I hyphenated it, Scott. It's hyphenated.
Technically, if you're counting words, if you hyphenate a word, does that count as one or two? I think it counts as two.
I just made it one word then. It's German.
It's German. You would know about German clowns.
I don't know about that, but you're a clown fucker is what you are, yes. Angry fuck sex, I believe, is what you enjoy to engage in, which... I mean, if it involves clowns, I know it's illegal in Lithuania, so.
Actually, they make movies about that in Lithuania. Oh, never mind.
Why do I doubt that you would not know that?
Never mind.
I'm that's okay, Scott. I don't judge. I've been to Thailand, as you know, so.
What do you do in Thailand, James?
I have sex with hookers, so. Yes.
Are you allowed to go back?
No, I'm not. I'm in Tuscany. Tuscany, Kansas. But that's
they don't have an extradition agreement with Thailand, do they?
I wear a fake mustache in Thailand.
Oh, is that effective?
I did. Yes. So the picture at the airport is me with a fake mustache on there.
So when you want to go back, you just take the mustache off.
That never occurred to me, Scott. That means I can go back to Thailand, doesn't it? I'm so happy.
Yeah, but...
You're like a criminal... You're a criminal mastermind, you, Scott.
James Suckling on February 4th is flying back to Thailand.
Thailand.
Police officer in Thailand.
No. I'll wear a...
Investigating crimes against humanity.
I'll wear a beatnik goatee, fake one. They'll never expect it. I'll say I'm a poet.
That'd be great, James Suckling with a beatnik. Goatee.
James Suckling is a beatnik.
No, he's not.
I'm not. I actually talk like this. I talk like Wilfred.
I'm so nice to him with that fake voice. Yes, it's melodic, isn't it? Scott, I need to tell you a story. Give me a little more Babbage, although I'm not sure.
I like it.
I don't dislike it. It's fine. I expected something a little bit more grandiose because of the score. That's all.
Well, I think it's fine. I think you're underselling the front palate. I think it's a quite wonderful front palate, and I think it's
that's
the star of the show. I really do. I do like the acidity. I like the dryness, and I like that kiss of minerality and those things together with the front palate. I like it a lot. It's just a little out of balance. That front palate's a little too big for the rest of the wine. I don't find the finish as long as you do. Interestingly, when I just sip it, when I just quaff it, the finish seems to be a little longer. But when I draw air over it, it just stops.
So, Scott.
Sir.
Do you remember in Pickerington, Ohio, near where we are from, there is an international market. Are you familiar with that?
I didn't know there was an international market.
Yeah, there's an international market over by where that Get Air jumpy thing plays.
I've never been in the international market over there. I did not know it existed. It's so in the same where the Kroger is.
Yes, but it's back behind by that church. So it's set back in there, that building?
Church. I don't know that.
Church is where people go to worship God. Do you know what that is?
Not all churches do they worship God.
Well, we don't need to know what you know to go.
No, they worship money, many of them.
Oh.
So back by where the Gold's Gym used to be?
Yeah, somewhere back there. Yeah, it might be where the Gold's Gym was. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, so they have had an international market in there like 2-3 years. And I think they also have a restaurant behind there. I don't know what the hell they do in there. So in before when you went in there, they had this lovely, and it would be better if you'd been in there, but they had this wonderful, really produce section where they had a ton of stuff. Lots of international foods from, well, obviously from Asia, but also from Europe. I mean, they had a whole gamut of everything. They had a lot of different frozen meats that you could buy that were packaged.
Really?
Really impressive. So I go in, clean, organized. I go in, and that's changed a little bit. So the produce section, they had a couple baskets of vegetables, right? And then they had a bunch of hair cleaning products that they had bought off a pallet someplace, right? And then beyond that, basically what they've been doing now is just going and buying these pallets and putting that shit in their store's inventory. They had a couple shelves of just random wines.
Oh.
From grocery store stuff. Like, okay. If you wanted a 2017 Woodbridge, you could get it there. That kind of, not organized, very dirty. And then the majority of their store is not food anymore. It's like pots and pans and stuff like that. Cheap stuff that are from India or Africa, but are just knockoffs. A lot of Hindu statues you can buy.
Okay.
Then in the back, they have a massive clothing section where I know that this is traditional garb, but it looks like stuff that William wears for Halloween. It's that poorly made. I looked at it. Now, forgetting all that.
So you'd been there and you'd bought produce there.
Yeah. It was good.
Okay.
It doesn't exist anymore. So, and they still call it that. It was one of those places you walk in and you went, oh, I really wish I could leave. And you... But
didn't you leave?
Well, there's one door one way. I didn't know if somebody would murder me. It's kind of, I was towards the back. This is the thing. I was towards the back of the store, right?
Being dramatic or racist. Near where I'm not sure which. Maybe. Probably both.
And it smelled odd. It smelled... Folks, if maybe you don't know, folks, but I do. Oh. If you've ever been in a slaughterhouse...
A slaughterhouse.
A slaughterhouse, Scott. It smelled... of barnyardy slaughterhouse in the back of the grocery store. They don't have any meat that I saw, but there was a definite aroma of meat, dead meat, like where they're butchering. butchering shit. And they don't have a butcher. They don't have a license to do that. But they're definitely butchering animals somewhere in this store.
It's Ohio. You don't need a license to do anything.
That's fucking nasty. But anyway... So you're smelling this. It smelled like a barn stall / slaughterhouse.
Mm. Okay.
And then you had all the palletized, the stuff off the pallets.
That's the hair products.
Hair products.
What hair products did you buy?
I bought nothing. I mean, then they also had some bulk rice. It was pretty, yeah. But they still, this is the best part. They still had the old aisle signs up for what used to be there that isn't there anymore. So like. Tea cakes up there, and there's a bunch of clothing racks. You know, I mean, they didn't even bother to take those fucking signs down when they just changed their store. I went in there to see if I could get some authentic ramen noodles because we like to do that. Yeah, they
didn't have so you stayed. By the way, you go to the bazaars near where I live. Where
I was actually hiding in the back aisles because
there's a bunch of Nepalese bazaars near where I live. They have the ramen product that you're discussing.
Yes, well, this did not.
GN International Grocery.
Yes.
Premium quality.
Not.
At affordable price.
I don't know.
Not prices, price. GN International Grocery is run by hardworking people, just like you, Rob Dern.
No, they're not like me.
Shop organic produce.
They didn't have any produce.
Fresh dairy.
They didn't have any dairy.
And other grocery items. Without making your wallet sweat.
I really didn't need pots and pans. Lots of pots and pans. Tea sets. They had tea sets. And they had a lot of glassware. But it was all stuff that they bought. They go down to these places where you buy a pallet of just random shit. That's what they bought. You know?
It's open 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Oh, guess what?
It doesn't need to be.
Under our mission statement? They have like a little business card. It says GN International Grocery, 1,320 square feet available for rent.
Yeah, it's the back half where they have all those clothes.
You could rent it.
And do what with it?
Sell groceries.
We could do the show there. You could smell the slaughterhouse yourself.
Why were you there?
Because I was killing time, and it used to be kind of cool, so I was like, I'll walk through it.
And you walked in, didn't immediately turn around and leave, even though it had this aroma.
The aroma was further towards the back. It wasn't at the front.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you didn't... This is so unlike you. You didn't mock anybody. Not even about the signs.
Who am I going to... I'm talking to myself?
Well, there's proprietor of the store.
Yeah,
I'm surprised
right.
you didn't ask them about the tea cakes.
They didn't have any.
Well, they had a sign for tea cakes.
They did.
Maybe you just couldn't find
Man,
it.
Man, they would have fucking murdered me. I would have never. I would be back there getting butchered. Man, when I smelled that slaughterhouse smell, I'm thinking, no.
So you're saying it's a front? It's just a really bad front?
There's something. Yes, it's not a good thing.
Something not around.
No,
but
you
not
don't
good
want
about
to,
it.
It's nefarious. Yeah, you don't want to be in there. So you know.
You're right. Earlier, you had said you would.
You need to go.
Something to tell me about that was a place we like to go. I've never been there.
Yeah.
And that I would never think of it. You were right about the I would never think of it, but you were kind of wrong about the we like to go there thing.
I thought you went there.
I think you went there once, didn't you?
Yeah.
And talk about
just
it.
Just one time, yeah. Forgot about it.
What did you get? I can't remember. There was something you were very
noodles.
Impressed about yourself. I think noodles it was. Maybe rice, like arborio rice. Rice for risotto, maybe, or something
maybe
like
something.
That.
Maybe some tea cakes. I couldn't get them this time.
You know, I don't even know what tea cakes are. I'm going to be honest with you. Are they little, like, shortbreads?
They weren't there, so I wouldn't know.
They're like little shortbread, like cookies?
I don't know.
Like a ridged?
They had tunics where those were.
Shape.
They had big tunics where those were.
Big tunics.
Yes. I think I saw a samurai costume, too, and I'm not sure what that was all about.
Samurai costume.
I'm serious. That's what it fucking looked like, man. And then they had some, like, patio chairs in there.
You really don't like this wine, do you?
It's fine. You know, after you've had the plague of very acidic white wine in your stomach is not necessarily... what you're dying to drink. You know what I mean?
Know you'd much rather have a rosé, and I don't know why you didn't pick that instead of...
Well, you know, that's
Sauvignon
okay.
Blanc.
But...
I enjoy the Babbage.
It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just if I was, you know... Nah, it's not what I anticipated something a little bit more special. It's not.
There's things you like in Sauvignon Blanc. You want them to be like waxier, almost more petroleum-like. That's a thing you dig with this.
I would just say more interesting.
See, I don't... The interesting level on this for me is fine.
The interesting level for this wine at its price is perfectly acceptable.
Yes.
It's actually quite good. It's not, though, when you consider the fanfare jerk-off stuff that the Spectator did. Nah, come on. It's not that. It's not worth... It's not even in that ballpark. Maybe they gave them a ringer bottle. They do that sometimes, man. They do that.
What do you mean a ringer bottle?
They will give... Allegedly. It's just like when a car magazine tests a car, they might send a ringer car that is just maybe a little bit better than what you might get on the showroom floor. Maybe it's tuned just a little bit better. Well, there's always been some allegations, occasionally... that when you send in a bottle for sampling, maybe you mix in a little bit of something else in your from your
How dare you
portfolio.
That.
You can put any label in there you want.
This is QAnon stuff.
I'm just saying.
Folks, Rob's, do you have any proof of this? Who says this other than you?
I have read an article or two.
Where? When?
I don't have to answer your questions.
What article are you referring to, sir?
I might have wrote it. No, I didn't write it. Steve Bodie probably wrote
it. Steve Bodie wrote it.
He was quoting himself in it. So
well, that's how they fool him with McManus.
Well, it's underrated. It's an undervalued wine.
According to him.
According to, yes.
You know, we need to bring that back.
Who?
The McManus.
What are you going to drink from them?
We enjoyed it. We enjoyed the McManus. We agreed it's an undervalued wine.
But what would you drink from them?
We could pretty much pick anything we wanted to drink from them. It's been so long. We can revisit.
But I don't want to drink anything from them.
We like them quite much.
Nah.
They're fine. Actually, we thought McManus was good.
Well, then buy some McManus.
Okay.
Go find it somewhere.
I will.
I don't know where you'll find it, but...
We used to be able to find it.
Well, it's at that Home Goods store. Home Buys. That's what it is. They have mice in there.
It used to be at the Meijer.
I don't remember it there, but mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it was a little bit there. But the Homebuys had it, and then mice run through the store. I need to go back to Homebuys.
I've been to Homebuys in forever.
I know. It's a little dirty. There were mice last time.
It was always a little dirty. The Morse Road store was a little more dirty.
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, was a lot of mice. A lot of mice.
Be interesting if they still have their wine market.
I don't know.
They did well. They really did well. Well, for what they were. It was like the Odd Lots of.
It's because they wine. Bought out the Andersons.
They bought out other allotments too.
Well, I mean, they didn't have anything high end, but they had the closeout stuff. And people always like the closeout stuff, and you can't find closeout stuff in grocery stores. They don't sell that. So people will go there. I mean, you can't find $6, $7 bottles of wine that are palatable at a grocery store, but you could there because it's closeout.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's hit and miss, but sometimes you'll find something you like and you buy a case of it. That's how that works there.
And they had some of the stuff that was just regular price. Would we? At Silver Labor, was it Cone?
Yeah. BH Cone. BR Cone.
BR Cone, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when I worked for the Andersons back in the day, one thing that we had was a massive amount of closeout wines that we had out in the center aisle. And we had tons of them.
Yeah.
Case stack after case stack. Maybe we'd have 50 different things out there. But that's one thing we did. And then we had a massive wine selection beyond that. I mean, some of the things we'd carry would be like, I mean, where do you think I got Smith Holt Lafitte from? I bought it there. We carried Smith Holt Lafitte, Pointe Canet, Baron Pichon. We carried a bunch of.
You guys had a hell of a selection.
Yeah. I mean, Ridge. We never were able to get Turley because that's back before Turley had any kind of distribution.
We bought Turley there a couple times.
Well, that's in modern day. Back when I worked there, that was before that. Yeah, then they started selling some Turley. We had some Quilcilla Creek, all sorts of stuff we'd have. You know, tons of Italian wines, French, Chateauneufs left and right. It was just a massive, I mean, and the best thing in our store was, a big part of it, we had these custom wooden racks that we sold out of. So you'd have your display bottle, and then behind there, everything would be vertical in the wooden racks.
Stored properly.
Yeah. We didn't use a great deal of those grocery store shelves.
Everything would be horizontal.
Mm-hmm. And when we did, we'd all often have it in boxes behind it and try to really... We'd put our crappy stuff then on the grocery store shelves. So I remember we were doing a reset, and we were talking about everything, and I said, well, why don't we just expand our department? That's a good idea. So we like took a bunch of space from everybody else, and we almost doubled the size of our department. It got huge. It was medium sized when I started. By the time I was done, we were like one half of the side of the store. It was ridiculous with beer and everything, because we had one of the biggest beer selections then too. Yeah,
particularly of European beers.
Oh, yeah.
Beers from around the world, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not just European.
So we just took over everything. It's like, we're the bigger. We make more money than they do. Let's just take it all. I'm like, yeah, take it all the way to the meat department. Okay, yeah, that's what we did. So, well, folks, we're going to take a break. But be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So in tonight's potpourri, Scott, we're going to briefly discuss when buying a gift, a bottle of wine or something.
Okay.
What are things you should consider? What's your mindset? I'll start off by saying, because I recently did this, actually.
Oh, you regifted a bad bottle of wine somebody else gave you, and you regifted a bad bottle of wine?
No.
That's definitely your mindset. You've done that numerous times.
Well, I would do that to you. I started off by considering, A, what is good, right? But then I thought about, what about the palate of the individual drinking it? What would they enjoy? More so than what I would enjoy. I then correlated those two things together, and then I came up to a decision. But you never just say, I like this, I'm going to buy them this. Try to think of, what do they like? Assuming that you know the person that well, right? And I did know this person. And I said, I know I would buy them a Cabernet, for instance, right?
Okay.
But I want them to have a Cabernet. And they would like big fruit, and they would like something that is, you know, because I would go and say, well, I'll buy Armagh, right? That's a good one, right?
Okay.
By Marriott Subwards. But I went, But they might need something a little softer. So where do I go? Where do I go? What's a good gift? Justin. Justin's a good gift. So I got them a bottle of Justin. And I got myself a bottle of something that was more expensive and nicer. But that's okay.
Justin
I deserved a nice gift one. Too.
I think
not wine specifically. Not a specific wine, but the technique of, you know, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of, what is their palate? How does it cross-sect with mine?
I think there's two ways to go when you're buying a wine gift for someone. You either know what they like to drink, and you show them something that's maybe a little bit out of their price range. They haven't had something special in what they like. Family member, she drinks Sauvignon Blanc, showed her the Turley Sauvignon Blanc. It changed her life. She was drinking junk stuff. I'm like, sometimes you want to spend a little bit more. Not that you can find the Turley where we're at, but the idea is show her something premium in their varietal without breaking the bank. And sometimes you can do that. Just nudge people to spend a little more money on wine. It's worth it, folks. The other thing is, do I want to show them something different? You know, maybe it's a white wine drinker. Show them a really approachable red wine to try and just push them that way. Something that, and when I do that, I'm going to think, okay, what's something that everybody's going to like? We talk about that drinkability factor.
Well, I gave the Justin to Hank.
Oh, okay. Perfect. He loved it.
Yeah. I mean, it's right up. He's never had it. He doesn't know what it is. But same time, that's what he would drink.
Yeah.
I don't think he knows that it exists, but I think Hank would drink Justin like crazy. It's Paso, but it's not Paso. You know what I'm saying? It's a very inviting, enjoyable red wine. It's a good choice.
I think another one that's that crossover red wine that I was talking about, a white wine drinker, saying, hey, and maybe you get them two. Maybe you get them a red and a white.
You can do that.
But I want you to try this red wine.
Mm-hmm.
What's one that's a good crossover? Loose Martini.
Which one?
The Sonoma.
Oh, the Cabernet?
Yeah.
Well, if you don't drink reds, going to a Cabernet is a little.
But that one's an easy one.
It's soft. I mean, it's soft.
Yes. It's got that texture, that soft texture. And it's not this big burly, and it's not too savory fruitish either. It's got a nice balance between sweet berry and savory fruit for a cab.
But also, though, with that, when you're considering it, think about this, though. You don't also want it to be something that they just will see as soon as they walk into the grocery store right in front of them, right?
Yeah,
you want it to look like you want them to know that you know it's there and they'd have to seek it out to get it. You could tell them where it is, but it's not going to be right there in their face. Louis Martini might be a little bit like that.
The thing I like about that is if I'm showing something new and different, they can find it and get it again. That's kind of a nice effect of it. It's great if I give somebody a bottle of Turley and say, I hope this is your favorite wine ever, because you can't buy it.
That's the dickish thing to do.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's...
I have given Louis Martini as a gift one time, but it was the Napa. But I bought the Napa for $21.
That's ridiculous.
It was a good price.
And there's that other end. It's like, if you want to change somebody's world and you give them a special bottle of wine, you know, I've not met the person who is a red wine drinker and you show them Turley, they just don't love it. And it really doesn't matter what the varietal is, what the vineyard is. It's just a different wine experience. I think the same would be true of Carlisle. Mm-hmm. Fuck, we love Carlisle, folks.
Carlisle's good. Here's a question, Scott. This is off. This is a different topic. But what winery that people like that you think is overrated?
Fisheye.
No, not stupid. Like a legitimate one.
I mean, the easy one to point out.
Not Camus.
Is Camus. Well, just because it gets...
Well, Camus is good. It's just...
It really is good. And
The problem with those wines, they're all overrated when they cost $70, $80, $90. That's not a good price range to buy
I don't know if they're overrated. I think they're overpriced.
Okay, they're overpriced.
You know what I'm saying?
They're over... Yeah, that's a bad price range because you're not getting anything that's bespoke, really. Occasionally, you can find that, but you're not finding anything necessarily bespoke in that price range. So you're really like buying something they made 50,000 cases.
I gave my answer, and it's really not the answer to your question. It's really not overrated. It's just...
What do you think?
Let's just say it's slightly overpriced. I think it deserves... Everybody loves it. It's high quality. They do a great job.
Mm.
It's just, is Camus really worth $100?
No.
Well, it's just... It's
worth 60.
I'd rather break that $100 up and buy 3 bottles. I think you can find things that are... For sure, if you buy a $60 and a $40 bottle of wine, you can find multiple things that are as good as a bottle of Camus.
Oh, sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, easily.
But it's still... Camus is fucking great. It's year in, year out. They know what the fuck they're doing. It's like a good price for Camus is $90.
Which is,
it's a good price.
It used to be $69. And they make, 30,000 cases of it. And that's 12 bottle cases, I think.
But I'm not sure if they don't make more than that.
And that's a lot. I mean, you're not really getting a lot of it. It's like, that's special, is it? No, it's not.
But it is special that you can make 30,000 cases of that, and it's really, really good.
Yeah.
There aren't many that can say that. I think people love the fucking Prisoner.
Oh, that's
so overrated, and it's so not...
That's awful.
Good.
See, that's the thing I don't get.
Okay.
But I don't understand because...
it's not... I just think it's a way overrated.
Well, they don't taste the way I think that these people envision them tasting. Because the people that are drinking it I like a big red that's nice and smooth. And when I drink The Prisoner, and I drink 8 Days in the Desert, I drink something that is weedy and red fruit driven and just slightly harsh and unpleasant. I don't see anything that's got these big ripe fruits that just draw you in and say, come in and sit on this warm, soft, cushy couch and put this wonderful silk robe around. There's none of that. It's just kind of a hard-edged, weedy, dry, off-kilter wine that's oaked bad, you know?
I think there's a maker that I'm surprised you haven't brought up already. I think they're not overrated as much as you do. I would say fit the general category.
Turley?
Orrin Swift.
Orrin Swift is The Prisoner.
But in general, the winery, beyond The Prisoner. And The Prisoner...
Well, I just said 8 Days in the Desert, Prisoner.
You did say 8 Days.
Talking about Orrin Swift, all of his stuff. Yeah. I mean, we had The Unshackled. It's not going to be released, but that is a reprehensible product. That's repulsive. Repulsive.
But I've had a couple of his. It had that one at tastings, and it was
the Machete
bottle. Machete. But
Machete.
Other than that, I've had Machete a couple different times, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm, but it's not nice.
No, I think we're just a slightly different. You hate them. You think they're way overrated? And
I think it's gutter trash is what it is. Expensive gutter trash. Just drunk. I mean, this is the thing. Yeah, when you said Orrin Swift, because they call it now the Prisoner Wine Company, but it's Orrin Swift, right? Orrin Swift is the umbrella.
Or did they sell it?
They might have, huh? Because they still do 8 Days in the Desert and all that other crap. And I know some people just love 8 Days in the Desert, and I had it, and it's just like, fuck you. That stuff is fucking shit. You know? I mean, hey, man. I'll go out in my backyard, get some crab apples, some grass clippings, and a dog turd, and make you something probably that will rival your 8 Days in the Desert. You know, so
yeah, technically it's not
they're high quality.
It is,
yeah,
Orrin Swift Page.
I wonder if he sold it off. Maybe his probation doesn't allow him to own it. He can't own a computer, can't own a prisoner.
No, you go first.
Regardless, folks, we're gonna take a break, but then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So the Babbage Black Label Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand, their 2022 vintage. It was in the Wine Spectator Top 100, number 21 to be precise, them giving it a 93, $14.99. Scott.
The reviews range from 90 to 94.
Mostly in the 92 to 93
range. Yep. That's asinine. I do really care for this. I think we're going to have a difference of opinion.
Mm.
Just fine. Won't be the first time. Won't be the last. I appreciate the front palate. I think the reason it's not a 90, this is a really easy to drink wine with some things that I really like. So it's not your average Sauvignon Blanc. Is it stereotypical New Zealand? You know this is New Zealand. That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
I like the kiss of minerality. I like the acidity. I like the dryness. I wish the finish was a little longer. But I'm going 89. I really like the texture. It's silky. I think, is this everything I want in a Sauvignon Blanc? No. Is this the super special wine? No, but at this price point, this is solid as fuck. This is a home run. It's not a 90. It no. just stops short of being a 90. If it was a couple things, if the finish was a little longer, which would eradicate my big concern with this, it's just out of balance. That front where it just drops off a cliff. It's an interesting ride when it drops off the clip, because then there's the kiss of minerality, and then that's when that astringency really comes out. But it's just this blast of it. It just happened so fast. I wish it just hung on a little longer. I don't expect Sauvignon Blancs to be the longest finishing things, but I wish this one was slightly longer. It just pulls up a little short there, hence just a little out of balance for me. I would buy this again. It's not in our market. $15. Yeah, this is great. If you're a Sauvignon Blanc drinker, you should try this.
Well, yeah, I mean, on to me. This wine for a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc that's $14.99. Those things, this wine does. I mean, this wine is well priced. It's very good value at $14.99. It is. It's a good value. It tastes like Sauvignon Blanc should. From New Zealand, which, you know what? What am I going to do? Criticize that? That's what I'm always preaching. You know, it should taste like this. It should taste like that because that's the way the Appalachian, the region kind of tastes. And this is showing all those different things that this area, Marlboro, tastes like, should taste like. And that's something that should be commended. And it is. That being said, the problem with this wine isn't the wine for me. The problem with this wine is the fanfare. It's unfair to the wine. It really is. I would have liked this wine probably better if I didn't know a damn score. That's stupid to say.
Well,
but it's true.
No, we see that all the time. You have high expectations.
I know. But I know what I was expecting for this. I've had 93s that are Sauvignon Blancs from New Zealand. I've had other wineries or other scored 93s, like Cloudy Bay. I know what it tastes like. And it's a completely different wine, different animal from this wine, right? But it's a 90-point Sauvignon Blanc. We both agreed with that. This wine is just earnest, straightforward. Here's what I am. I'm from New Zealand. Nice to meet you. This is what I taste like. By the way, this is what I'm supposed to taste like. You don't like that? Eh, fuck you. And I appreciate that. That being said, it doesn't have enough tinsel. Like Scott's saying, I don't think that the front palate is enough for me. But it's not necessarily in the front palate. It does, the acidity comes in on the wine too quickly for me. And you miss out on any kind of expansive mid-palate. The mid-palate for me is what's missing. The finish, when I say it has a longer finish, it doesn't have a longer finish. It just has a lot of acidity, right? And you're tasting, you're sensing the acidity. Yeah. You're not necessarily saying, oh, there's wet rock. There's nothing. It's just acidity. So in reality, it's an extremely acidic wine, which it's supposed to be. However, if you had a place of oysters and you had this bottle of wine, you'd be one fucking happy camper because this wine would be absolutely, positively perfect with that. I'm giving this wine, though, 87 of my points. I was between 87, 88. I'm sticking with the 87 because it just isn't exciting enough. You know, it can still be dry, still be classically New Zealand, and have more excitement, more pizzazz, more fizz, more something. The je ne sais quoi is missing in this wine. It's just, some wines are just have that it factor. Yeah. You can't say what it is. You just know it does it. It has it. This wine doesn't. This wine is an excellent example of a Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand that you'd write in a textbook and you put the picture there. But that's in a book. You know? But is it something that you're going to get excited about? No. Is it something that if you like Sauvignon Blancs, especially from New Zealand, you should try this? Yeah, you should. Because it's going to tell you, oh, yeah, by the way, this is supposed to taste like this, in case you didn't know. Put your Kim Crawford down. But this isn't as good as Love Block. This isn't as good as... I'm not even going to compare it to Kim Crawford because it's not fair. Because this is just a different wine. But for $14.99, great bottle of wine, really.
I would say similar to Kim Crawford. Now, one thing that we don't have with the Babbage is we don't have the year in, year out. Kim Crawford's is good.
Kim Crawford's is a million case production. And
they're able to... Year in, year out, it's solid, man.
But they're not. And this, though, this is a little more focused in purchasing. And obviously, I don't think this is a state grown. It's probably sourced, but at the same time, it is. Oh, it's state grown. No, yeah, it's a state grown. This is a state grown. So, Kim Crawford is certainly not. This is a state grown, though. So they're harvesting that. There's some nuance to it. It's just get a little more pizzazz in your winemaking. It's solidly done, but it's done kind of in an Amish style. It's a very
Did you say Amish?
It has a little bit of Amish to it. It's a Quaker wine. Yes. It doesn't believe in buttons. This wine needs some buttons. That's all. 87, 89. It's recommended because of the value.
I think if you're a Sauvignon Blanc drinker, you got to add this to your repertoire.
But if you're expecting something and getting excited about it because you saw it at number 21 in the Wine Spectator and it got all these scores... Don't.
It's fine. And they get it wrong sometimes. There have been budget price wines in the top 100 before that we've liked.
Yeah.
And there's been other ones that were dogs.
This isn't a dog. But
it's Not just, a 93 and a 94.
No, keep your expectations. Don't expect something that you're going to taste and it's going to change your world, or you're going to remember it 3 weeks from later, from that. You're not. But that's okay. Not all wines are like that. This wine is not like that.
But, you know, here's what this is. If you were going to have a reasonably affordable wine that you're going to drink every day, you could do worse than this.
You could. I'd still like to taste the Sauvignon Blanc or the Pinot Noir. I'd like to taste that quite a bit. I'd like to taste the other stuff. Because, especially in Pinot, I bet we'd really like the Pinot. Because if they take that same mentality towards making Pinot and it's just straightforward,
yeah,
that's great. I like that. That's something I can get into. So,
Woods Wholesale Wine out of Grosse Pointe, Michigan, who ships, I don't know if they ship to the whole United States, $13 a bottle. It looks like the retail price on this is actually $18. Which is right in line with Kim Crawford.
Oh, folks, so you know, right now, just the regular Babbage standard, not the black label, the standard, it's for sale for $14.99 right now on wine.com, the 2022, and it got a 92 from the Spectator.
And same website, Woods Wholesale Wine.
By the way, I don't think that's a state grown, so when you go underneath there, it's not a state grown. So,
What are you saying about the state grown?
Well, I think the black label is where the estate grown starts.
Yes.
And so I'm looking at the one right below this one isn't below it. It's actually the same price, but it's not estate. So it's sourced to a certain extent. But it got 92 from the Spectator, and it's $14.99. You can get that right now. I think you can also still get this one. Let's look. Yep, this is for sale currently.
Have we done the Sarah Jessica Parker in Vivo X?
No. Yeah. But both the Sauvignon Blancs are for sale right now on wine.com. So check them out, folks. They are recommended. Give it a whirl.
It was still $15 on the wine.com.
Both of their Sauvignon Blancs at $14.99. Yep. So, for Rob the Wine Guy and Scott the Unlicensed Taxi Driver, we will bid you adieu.
Adieu.
But see you next time. Here on the Wine Vault. Good night.